Greetings and salutations, and welcome to another edition of Future Imperfect. I am Admiral Phillips, and joining me in this adventure into the stars are...
It is I, Mike the Birdman, and I guess I'm second in command on this. I'm not sure what kind of class of vessel we're on now, because things just keep changing around here. But hey, I'm here, I'm glad to be here, and excited to talk about Trek for a change. Isn't that fucked up?
Also joining us are...
I guess I'll go next. Alex, who somehow hated the show, but then didn't hate it.
It's weird how that works. And then finally joining us is...
Aaron Pallier. Yeah, and I have He's a there. Lot of weird feelings about this. Yeah, yeah. It feels strange to actually somewhat enjoy Trek recently.
I know. So I guess without further ado, what was your... We'll go into to the initial impressions as we were watching it, and then finally what we thought as it came out the other side. So, Mike, if you want to start with your initial impressions at hearing this culmination of what came out.
Okay, so when Star Trek's Lower Decks was announced, I saw the trailer, and I'm a pretty big animation guy, and I'm thinking, okay, this looks kind of like Rick and Morty style of animation. Don't know if it suits the Trek aesthetic, but it's not the Filmation stuff from the 1970s. So, okay, sure, you've got me hooked there. It's a popular animation look. And as the humor went on with the show, it did win me over as time went on. I wasn't a huge fan of most of the pilot, but as the show got on with more of its episodes, I know friends of ours who are also work in the media, CBS has sent out a press kit that showed the first four episodes. I think the show really hit its stride around episode 5 or 6 is where I really started to like things. But as it went on, I found myself liking the crew of the Cerritos a lot more for the most part. I will say, of the two lead characters, one I really, really like, and one floats between having some redeeming qualities and wanting me to blow her out of the goddamn airlock. I can't stand Mariner about 90% of the time. Occasionally she'll say something really profound. She'll have a good moment of character development. She'll have a good bit of banter with somebody. And then she instantly turns into hyper fangirl, annoying. I'm going to break rules for no visible reason. Boimer.
I'm with you there. With you there, man.
Yeah.
Now, Michael.
Yes.
We should probably clarify that she's supposed to be a likable character. If she was supposed to be an antagonist that you hated, it's one thing, then she'd be doing her job. But you're supposed to side with her the way it's written.
I would dial her back about 30-40% because I more get Boimer's point of view. I mean, Mariner does have some funny moments, but it's like they're trying to overcompensate for something. I mean, I myself am not a professional comedy writer. Like, I'm very much an early creative writer, very, very amateur. And there's just some things with her that just don't click with me. Although I marathoned the season today in one sitting, I can see her arc now that I've marathoned it in three and a half hours. And then now it makes a lot more sense. But having the week to week gap just lets you sit with it, and it doesn't feel good. And I don't like that.
You know what it is? She is everybody on the show. You know, you amplify yourself in a cartoon space when you want to make it, cartoony. Everybody's about an 8 out of 10 on the amplification level. She's at 11 all the time. There's is there ever a line in the entire show where she's not yelling?
There are some moments in the middle of the show when it's kind of revealed that she is Freeman's daughter. And she's talking with somebody and she's like, look, I don't want people to find out. I don't want to get treated differently. And it took 5 or 6 episodes for this to even come out. And I realize it's only a 10 episode show, but I feel like something more should have come out a little bit sooner. And I know there are hints about it very early on. I think like even as early as the pilot. In fact, I'm almost pretty sure of that.
Well, yeah, because the dad is an admiral.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, 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 she's stuck with you now. And then she's like, oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah. And it's just something about her character. I wish I liked the voice actress, but yeah, I don't like the way she's written.
No.
It's also,
she's obnoxious.
She's written to, or at least the voice direction is to talk very fast. And I feel
Rick and Morty thing, I think.
Which Rick and Morty works when Rick and Morty, half of the dialogue is improvised and then it's just rambling. Oh, wow. And I mean, it's one guy doing both voices. So ramble one way and then ramble back in the other voice. And sometimes he does both characters at the same time. So it's a little more natural, where this almost feels like it's almost like you're watching the show at 20% faster speed than you should.
Yeah. I mean, one character that really stuck out to me, I think as the most likable, was I think the character's name was Tendi. She's the Orion science officer. I really liked her.
Yeah. I loved Tendi. I actually think that Tendi's the most interesting character in the show and well written. Mm-hmm. She's also the most Star Trek of characters because she's has this kind of like beautiful like view of the universe.
Well, this wonder.
The only thing that I have a complaint with Tendi though is that she's supposed to be a medical doctor, right? But she's rarely in sick bay and she's often just doing maintenance off with Rutherford.
I think it was supposed to be hinted that like you're hired as
general science division.
You're basically hired as a general laborer ship position and they call you wherever they need you and your education means nothing. It's supposed to be like,
that's not Star Trek.
No, I know, but that's, I think how
that's the methodology they're using though.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that doesn't make sense.
No,
that's what I'm trying to say. Like, well, if you're an ensign, it means you're an officer.
Yes.
Which means that if she's an ensign in medical, she has a medical degree. She's probably has a PhD in medicine.
Or so she's at least a nurse practitioner or something.
Yes.
In Starfleet, you would have at least a master's degree. Let's put it that way. If you're an ensign. So what the hell is she doing in tubes doing maintenance?
That's a really fine question,
actually.
unless she's monitoring the engineer, like his vitals,
perhaps. But
she's not.
It seems to be hinted at that she just loves doing the work. So she'll do it anyway. And that seems to be what most of them in the lower decks, or at least in that crew, they all just love doing the shit work, so they just keep doing it. And maybe they would be promoted if that wasn't their personality types, I guess.
Which is weird because looking at the four main characters with Rutherford, Tendi, Boimer, and Mariner, three of them are easily promotable. If these people were on any other ship in the fleet outside of the Cerritos, they'd be at least lieutenant junior grades, or if not full lieutenant, because they're mostly competent. They're just not extraordinary.
Yeah, and that they've even said as much. You know, if this were some other ship.
Can I disagree and say that these people would have never been accepted into Starfleet Academy, let alone graduated from it?
I think
even Boimler,
Even
Boimler, because he's socially incompetent. Well, I mean, we have a socially incompetent character in TNG, you know, with Barclay.
Yeah.
But Boimler is so brown nosy, is so kind of out of touch with anything in the command division at all, that he shouldn't even be out of Starfleet Academy, of first year Starfleet Academy, let alone graduated in on a starship.
So what you're saying is, if they had made this about cadets
or crewmen that aren't officers?
Well, no, if they would have made this about people that aren't even in Starfleet Academy yet, but are trying to learn enough to get into it.
Like it's an internship.
Yeah. They wouldn't be on a Starfleet vessel. Okay. So let me give you my like overall impression, because maybe this will put my comments in context.
Okay.
I enjoyed the show. I actually thought, when it was first announced, I was I'm okay with that. It's a cartoon, big deal. I enjoyed the 1970s cartoon. It was great. And they're going to have some comedy in it. That's fine. It's a cartoon, no big deal. Watching it, I could not say that this is canon. it cannot be canon. There are so many like in jokes and references that it's clearly meant to be a comedy for the viewer rather than a dramatic production of in the Star Trek universe.
It took me a while to come to terms with it. In my mind, I'm like, okay, think of it like the whole show is one big Animaniac sketch.
Yeah, but it's not canon. Now, that being said, if it was canon, none of these characters would be there. There's absolutely no reason why the whole command staff wouldn't know that Mariner was the daughter of the captain.
Yeah,
because that would be their goddamn file.
This is, you know, the definition of a, you know, leave your brain at the door popcorn cartoon.
Yeah, and that being said, if you go, okay, this is definitely not canon in universe. This is a comedy. These characters don't really fit. If you do that, it's a fun show to watch. And I enjoyed myself. Yeah. And that being said, I hated Mariner. I thought she was way over the top, unlikable, generally a drag on the rest of the show, where I liked Boimler, even when he was being a little bumbling. I'm like, this guy has, you know, the best intentions. Yeah, he's bumbling, but he's a good guy. Tendi, the Orion girl, fantastic. Like, she's like this bright-eyed, bushy-tailed new ensign. Rutherford, a great engineer. And my favorite character in the show is a background character, and it's the Cajun doctor, T'Ana. Because I love that character, how just gruff and pissed off she is constantly, and how she swears and is bleeped out. I think that's hilarious. So is the show, like, great? No. It's not, because there are so many weird things that are happening in it that just aren't Star Trek or are clearly made to be a joke to the viewer rather than be in universe. So overall, like the entire season, I would say it's 5 out of 10. Is it worth watching? Yeah. It's the best thing since Enterprise went off the air for Star Trek. And it's 1,000 times better than Picard or Discovery. I actually laughed and had a smile on my face at points during this season.
Oh, yeah.
Lower Decks, which is a whole hell of a lot better than Discovery or Picard.
Now, looking at it, you know, I know we'll go into some of the episodes, but I was either indifferent or sort of blah about most of the episodes. But there are two episodes in particular that I went, I actually really liked them. And that made me actually like the show. One was Much Ado About Boimler, episode 7. And we'll talk at the very end, obviously, about the finale, because I liked that one too. Mm-hmm. But the rest of them were just, for me, it was like, yuck, for most part. Like, I could watch it, but I found myself getting bored.
Yeah, yeah. There were elements that I found it boring, to be honest, and there were elements that I found it really funny and really good. It took me a couple episodes to really, I don't know, get into the mindset of the show, because I found it very off-putting. I was trying to like it with an open mind, considering we've just had two downers of a Star Trek show, and this is the first lighthearted one we get, and the guy also wrote like TNG season 8. On Twitter and wherever else it was. So I knew the guy had more than enough mental capacity to write a show that felt more Trek than what we've gotten. And that being said, like, yeah, I found some of the characters interesting. I did like, I found myself liking Boimler and the Orion the most, but Rutherford I found to be a little bit annoying, but in like just a weird way. Like, he was not really Starfleet material. He just happened to be a cyborg guy that worked on the ship.
Every other line is ha ha.
Or he's like, he can program himself to do any task pretty much. And then you have Mariner, where she's just a total like just grazed.
She seems
on your
to
ear.
Know everybody for some reason.
She knows everybody and everything, and yet she's like this lowly cadet because she keeps getting demoted. And the only place that she's survived is, which this I get. The only place she survived is on the Cerritos because her mom is the captain. Which means that she can kind of filter and protect her, whereas any other ship, she would have been booted out of the fleet, which is correct. But the fact that she's still in the fleet amongst the monumental screw-ups, it speaks volumes of where Starfleet's at in this point in time.
But remember, it just can't be canon.
No. Well, especially with some of what happens later, but but yeah, I mean, I didn't hate the show, but I wanted to hate it just because it was like a Rick and Morty knockoff, the animation style, and like the trailer just put me off like no other.
There was no way, no possible way it was going to be as well written as Rick and Morty is.
No.
Layering, like, whether or not you like the comedy of Rick and Morty, the layering in of jokes that don't pay off for multiple seasons, or callbacks to different things, background B and C storylines, they were not going to have that kind of witty writing in here. I had no hope of that. What I hoped for was, would this be a cartoon that as a kid, and I had to put myself in that mindset, as a kid, I would have liked to have watched. And I would say for overall, yes, I would. Saturday morning cartoon, you know, if you take out some of the more crass stuff with like the bleeping of the swear words and stuff, this would have fit on like
Adult Fox. Swim for sure.
Adult Swim or Fox or something in, you know, the early 2000s when they were experimenting with new shows.
I think one of the things this show has going for it is that it can attract that Rick and Morty audience, is because if Trek is suffering from anything right now, in my opinion, is it needs an influx of new blood, because a lot of the older fans are grumpy, and Star Trek has tried to do something with Picard and Discovery, and there's pushback on both sides. Like, some people really like Discovery, some people really like Picard. And there's fans like us who are a little more critical of it. We like aspects of both of those things, but it's not us. But we're not drawing anybody new in, or at least remarkably few. I think Lower Decks is a chance to reach out to a new youthful audience, which has more spending power.
Not on CBS All Access.
No, which is weird.
Lower Decks is actually Star Trek in its own weird way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Picard and Discovery are like the antithesis of Star Trek in many ways, where it's dystopian and dark and not hopeful at all, and the characters are not memorable. Like, hey guys, we've been talking about Lower Decks, and we actually know characters' names.
Yeah, I can name three characters out of Discovery. I can name maybe three out of Picard, and one of them I only call Allison Pill and Romulan Samurai. That's all I can remember.
Yeah, there's Romulan Legolas. I don't know his name. There's Murder there's, Girl.
And there's drunk Spanish. There's drunk Spanish pirate.
But then there's like Lisa Laser Eye in Discovery. I don't know her name, and they've mentioned it like twice. But like in Discovery, you know Saru. You know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, Tilly. You know, Stamets. Okay. Stamets. And see, I can't even do that, and I've watched every damn episode of Discovery like four times to take notes on it, and I still don't know their goddamn. But you know what, there's 10 episodes of Lower Decks, and here we are talking about Rutherford, about Tendi, about Boimler, Mariner. As much as we hate Mariner, we can still remember her name. There's Ransom, who's the first officer. There's Dr. Ta'ana, who's the Cajun. We know these characters. There's Badgie, for God's sakes.
I love Badgie.
Badgie is the most Rick and Morty-ish of all the sort of characters they've made.
I loved Badgie. As crazy as that is, as un-Star Trek as Badgie is, that was fantastic.
You're going to have to take off my
safety. All the holodeck safeties, I'm going to help you.
And like, you, father.
Wait, yeah, wait, are you going to try and kill me again? Maybe.
Badgie, I mean, there's funny stuff, there's memorable stuff, and it's actually kind of light. It's lighthearted and fun. I might not agree with everything that the show says. I completely don't think it's canon, but at least it's good.
Yeah, and that's something I think Lower Decks can really bring to the franchise. It can bring back that sense of hope, that sense of lightheartedness. It can bring new people in. It can make people excited for this, and it can be fun. Like, this is the most fun I've had with Star Trek since the revitalization of the property with Discovery. I remember how disappointed I was with Picard. In fact, I actually had an interaction with a fan on Twitter a couple weeks ago. They were exclaiming how excited they were about Picard. And I said, I can't get excited because Captain Picard fights the fucking Reapers. yet with Lower Decks, I saw things in Star Trek that, you know what? Maybe they don't solve every single weird disease that happens in space. There's this freak funny farm that they call it. Because you know what? Without, you know, a Dr. McCoy or a Dr. Crusher or a holographic doctor, not every weird disease gets cured. There has to be a place for these people to go.
That was the episode that I first watched and I was like, I actually like this now.
Yeah, like it was legitimately interesting.
Well, it's especially when like they realize that they are finally going to a sanitarium, and it's like all beautiful women, and they're all, and they're fawning over him, and they're like, you're not really a freak, and they kick him off the planet. He's like, no, I want to stay.
They are there to like get better. That's what's, it's not like they're just there to be hidden and they're treated nicely. It's there that they're actually getting treated and made better.
Yeah.
They're being cured. There's still hope in that.
The show, I'll hear, it's not saying much, but this show is a lot better than the Stargate cartoon was when they made that.
There was a Stargate cartoon?
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. Stargate Infinity. I watched it on like Saturday mornings.
Wait, I think I remember this. I think it had a terrible toy line.
Several hundred years in the future, and it is bad. Bad. So I was worried this was going to be worse than that, and it is thankfully not. Now, if looking at the other episodes here, so do we want to get into too many of the plot lines, or is there specific episodes that you guys thought were highlights?
We should probably talk about the last episode for sure. Well,
I do want to talk that they did have a lot of nice callbacks to older series. Even though sure. They were just more or less throwaway fan service and conversation, usually by Mariner. And then I enjoyed the fact that Q showed up just as a weird cameo. Like, no rhyme or reason, but he just shows up just to, you know, be a dick. Play
tricks with them, and they told him to bugger off.
Yeah, more or less. And then he's like, go
bug the Enterprise.
Yeah. And then he leaves, which is funny because this is probably the longest or the latest that we've ever seen him show up in canon. At this point. And then, of course, like that started like the turning tide for me of a little bit of the content with the show. And which, again, that's like kind of a crappy reason. But the finale, honestly, was the one that I gravitated towards the most.
Yeah, watching it, I'll say this. I think I said it to you guys in chat message. It felt like a three-parter. Like, it was 60 minutes worth of content that they crammed into just under 20 before they used the last bit of airtime to just advertise Discovery, which I didn't like.
I didn't like that either. I was like, why waste it on Discovery? Why not tease something for like season two?
Can I talk about that thing with the last episode in Discovery? So you have this episode 10 of Lower Decks. It's fantastic. It's hopeful. You have a big smile on your face because Boimler kind of, you know, gets a reward at the end. Let's put it that way without spoiling it. There is some really funny parts. Riker shows up. That's going to be spoiled everywhere else. Riker and the Titan. So you have this great, you know, this kind of great feeling in your heart. And then comes Discovery Season 3 promo, where it's a mess of space junk after a battle. You can't tell what's going on. People are screaming or upset. Michael Burnham is tumbling through space and going to crash into a planet, and suddenly you don't care.
And that took up 4 minutes or whatever of the airtime, which I was like, no! Add that to the very end after it's over.
You can't tell what's going on. It's just like, it's millions of pieces of space junk. There's like a portal that like Michael Burnham tumbles out of. She's tumbling and screaming to the computer of her time travel thing.
3 foot long hair.
Yeah. God, what a piece of, what a way to ruin like this really kind of hopeful, uplifting, fun episode. Let's just throw a whole bunch of bullshit at the end about Discovery Season 3.
If they were going to show something at the end, they should have shown that little teaser they made, about how Janeway is joining the other animated cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been amazing. Just like a 10-second thing where you hear Janeway's voice and she says, like, welcome to whatever the ship's name is.
Or, welcome to the Academy or something.
Yeah, coming 2021. But they want to advertise something that's going to be airing on the same network. So blah, blah, blah. But I almost feel like Lower Decks would have done better on Hulu or another platform like Netflix.
Yep. I think Hulu would have been really fitting for them.
Like up here, it's on Crave, which is basically our only streaming platform outside of Netflix that's like Netflix, available up here. Yeah. So it is like a lot of people, when you get your cable package, it comes with it. So it's pretty standard. So I feel like it's available to more Canadians, like in a percentage wise, than it is to Americans. I don't see people subscribing to CBS All Access to get this show, even though it's one of the better things on there. As far as the plot of this last episode feeling like it was going too fast, it felt like a Power Rangers episode or something from like the 90s when a kid's show where it was like so much was happening. They put enough plot that you could have done a 3 or 4 parter.
Yeah. And this would have been a pretty cool 2 parter if they took the time to space things out.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It could have easily been a 2-hour long episode, like 2 1-hour standard, like TNG episodes, that kind of thing. So like an hour and a half total runtime. It could easily been that. Easily.
Did you like when Riker showed up and they showed his bridge and it actually had people on it and it actually had things unlike Picard.
The joys of animation. You can hire a whole crew.
Should I talk about the problems with Lower Decks and the starships in it? Should I talk about
them? Yes, please.
Okay, so let's start with the Titan. I should say Titan, because I hate it when people say the Enterprise or something like that, because it's a proper name. So you say Enterprise or Titan or Cerritos. Anyway, pet peeve. Titan actually has phaser strips exactly where it should have, but they're glowing blue for some reason and are indented into the ship rather than out of the ship. So when it comes in firing, it looks very strange. That's my only comment on Titan. But Cerritos is really weird, and I think that there had to have been some behind the scenes production issues with this, because there are two things that you generally see in the show: the master systems display, the MSD, which shows kind of like the decks of the ship when they're inside, and then you see the exterior of the ship. When you look at the exterior of the ship, you can count the window rows for decks, and you can come out, you can easily count at least about 18 decks when you take windows, lifeboat hatches, big chunks of space where there isn't windows, but there's more than enough room for decks. It's about 18 decks. But when you look at the MSD, it's 11 max. Like the MSD shows that there's a single deck on the edge of the saucer, where when you look at the exterior of the ship, there's clearly 3 decks, if not 5.
I know in dialogue they mentioned something about deck 20 at one point.
It sounds like they're playing a little fast and loose, or it could even be issues where, you know, one part of the animation team doesn't meet the other, or the writing team doesn't necessarily have contact, or blah, blah, blah. It's just a little loosey-goosey. Again, because it's a cartoon, you can get away with a little more, but yeah.
Because supposedly the MSD was actually done like by the Akudas who did all the graphic design on TNG through Enterprise. So they know what they're doing. I trust the Akudas, right? But when the exterior of the ship totally suggests a much, much, much larger ship, where they're talking about the California class, like Cerritos, is actually fairly small, comparatively speaking. But when you look at the exterior of the ship with all those window rows and decks, it's like, wow, this actually might have more internal volume than a Galaxy class. It's huge from the outside. Yeah, it's strange.
Now, how many different types of ships do we see in the show? We see the Cerritos. We see the Solvang, which gets blown up. We see the Titan. We see the Vancouver. Was that another type of the Cerritos?
The California
class. Was it another California?
Yeah, it's Cerritos. You have the Solvang, which is another California class. There's the one that has the Tellarite captain in it. Is it Merced? Yeah. That is also a California class. Titan is a Luna class, but you see some stuff in the background, but the only like close-up ships, if I remember correctly, are only California's.
That's what I thought, because I was wondering, because I guess I looked down for a second and I was trying to figure out, because like they go to one episode and they meet Mariner's friend, who's now randomly a captain, and she's commanding the Vancouver, and they mentioned this class can do like heavy demolitions or construction on planets.
That is a different class. Vancouver is a different class. I don't know what the class name is.
Okay, yeah, because I was wondering about that, thinking that is really fascinating to add that to canon loosely, because obviously I'm a big dork, and whenever I see something new and shiny, I'm thinking I want to put that in a role-playing game or something equivalent. But I thought that was interesting how Lower Decks did that, how they were introducing little things like that.
Vancouver is a Parliament class starship.
Okay. And what are its defining characteristics?
We see it once. That's it.
That's unfortunate, because I think that's a cool sounding name for a ship, first off. So to me, go Canada.
To me, when I saw it, it's bigger than a California class. It definitely has more decks, but it kind of looks like a pared down Nebula. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
you don't have the big roll bar that a Nebula or a Miranda has, but it has these giant impulse drives on the back that make it look like it's a freaking beast at sublight speeds. So I don't know. It does look bigger. Like, I can look at a picture of the ship and count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 decks on the upper side, at least, like on the upper side of the saucer. So it's definitely bigger than a California class.
Isn't it cool, guys, having a guy who knows ships with us?
It looks like 3 or 4 decks on the edge of the saucer, and it has those weird saucer indents that a California class has as well. It's bigger, but I bet you there's an MSD somewhere of it that shows it tiny as well. The internal and external stuff is weird in this show. It doesn't really add up. It's another one of the things that makes me think that it's not really canon.
I was about to say, one of the things that I think Lower Decks does, and this is probably my inner sound dork coming out, the show sounds authentically Trek. Like, I love the
theme
sound
song
libraries.
The theme song is more Trek than any of the previous Trek from 2009 onward.
Yeah, I'll agree. I agree with that.
The sound effects library sound great. Hearing the beeps and bloops of tricorders, doors, phasers, force fields. It's just, to me, it's little things, but when I closed my eyes today for just a second because I was really, really tired, and I was just listening to Discovery, and the sound designer on this, I can tell, in my opinion anyway.
You mean really? So you weren't listening to Discovery. You were
listening I was listening to Lower Decks. What I mean is, they painted such a vibrant soundscape, and with a cartoon, you really have to. And yeah. I think if Lower Decks does anything right, it's got a crew of very passionate people who I think will find their footing in season 2 and beyond. And that's something I guess we should probably begin to wrap this up, is where does this series go? Boimer is off the Cerritos now. Who do you follow now?
In my mind, they have one of two things they're going to do. And I hope they don't do the one. I hope they don't start the episode off with immediately having Boimler being kicked off the Titan and returning in shame just to reset the status quo. I have a feeling they may do that. Does it jump back and forth where it's a few episodes of him there and then he comes back? I don't see them writing him out of the show.
I think they're going to have him on Titan for a little, for like maybe 2 or 3 episodes before he comes back to Cerritos. and he's probably going to come back to Cerritos with his rank. And he ends up being acting like an NCO, even though he's like a lieutenant junior grade. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
because this show is showing ensigns doing enlisted work, which is really weird. It's another one of these things that it just doesn't make sense in the show and in canon that you don't have so many crew that they're sleeping in corridors, especially when they're officers. Like, ensigns are officers, folks. You don't have them sleeping in scut freaking cots in the middle of a corridor like that.
Aren't
right?
they in, like, they might have bunked rooms, but aren't they like a shared room somewhere in like a lower level of the ship?
Yeah. The only thing, okay, so you have enlisted, you have your enlisted people, which don't go to Starfleet Academy, but they're kind of like skilled people, right? Just like in the Navy, you have your enlisted people, you have your torpedo
like O'Brien.
Men. Yeah, exactly. They might actually be in shared rooms, right? But they're not going to be in corridors. Your ensigns are above those people. Your ensigns are officers. Why in the hell are they sleeping in corridors, first off? So regardless, maybe Boimler comes back and actually acts like an NCO like O'Brien was to the ensigns in the show that are acting like enlisted. I don't know. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I almost felt like the reason they did the whole sleeping in corridors, like it was almost to give them like a, I don't know, like a firefighter feel that they're all bunked together for their shifts. But which again didn't make sense to me. I thought like that would have been like, I can see them being bunked together if they're like a go team for like an away team or something. And
but they're all different departments. And
yeah, you know what I mean. Like yeah, if they were all in security,
and yeah, and they're all enlisted.
They're enlisted and they're bunking together because you know they're on the midnight shift.
That makes sense.
I could see that, but this was like I don't know. It was like a dorm room.
It's literally a corridor. Remember, it's not even a room. They're sleeping in nooks in the corridor. It's not even a room. People are walking by all the time.
Yeah, because I was always curious to know how this was laid out and why they're doing this. Because
they were sleeping like in those Japanese capsule hotels.
Yeah,
where you just like pull the liner so that nobody else will disturb you while you're sleeping.
And again, it's not like the ship has so many crew that they should have to be doing that. And it's not like this ship has a limited amount of space inside. Even if you go by the MSD, which shows like 11 or 12 decks, there's more than enough room there to have like 200-300 crew.
I think at one point they mention there's 105 people aboard the Cerritos. I think that was a number that I remember hearing more than once.
It was low 100s.
Yeah, like it just seems to me like the deck layout and the ship sleeping arrangements. And I know that's nitpicky as hell, but it, like Aaron pointed out, these guys are officers. They're not just some schlub who changes the lights on, you know, the L-cars display.
It's likely a excuse to save on animation so they could have them all in one place for extended periods of time,
which makes sense.
Yeah.
Now I wasn't sure, you know, before the show started, like should it get a second season? After watching the finale, yeah, it's kind of clear. Like I almost wonder if, because the guy who wrote the pilot episode also wrote the finale, and the pilot does feel distinctly different from what the show ended up becoming later on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if this was a case of he's not told if they're going to get a second season, and he's like, fuck it, I'm just going to write the Star Trek episode I want to write and we'll fit it in. like if it was, that's the intended way he wanted to make the show, but CBS is like, make it wacky.
Yeah, I could kind of see that. I mean, in the finale, honestly, like I loved it just from the fact that they actually showed the Titan, that they have Riker, that they have Troy on it, that they have Boimler actually, you know, get what he wanted out of it. And then the fact that, yeah, it was still had some wacky elements to it. And I really hope that they don't go the route of putting him back on the Cerritos or making him demoted and putting him back in the hole down there. But I think that there's a lot of room that they could still go with it. And after seeing the finale, I definitely liked it a lot more than I cared to admit.
You think they might bring him back as a replacement for the head of security?
I could possibly see that, or I could see one of the other three getting promoted somehow up there. Like, I could see him becoming like a con officer on the Cerritos and having some of the other ones finally get promoted, and then maybe Mariner's like, hey, this sucks. I'm by here, down here by myself. Maybe I should actually straighten up enough to get promoted.
Yeah, I mean, the show, I think, now has demonstrated over 10 episodes. It had a rough start, but it started to find out where it wants to go. With things looking up the season two, do we know when it's coming out? Sometime next year or the year after? It's soon-ish.
It depends on where is it animated? That's the question.
That I don't know.
That I don't know. I know they were talking about Star Trek Prodigy, which is the Janeway show, comes out next year.
It's entirely animated in the States. So they're not looking at 6 month to a year lead times like a lot of the Korean shows are. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, potentially if it's written and they can voice it, it seems to be
next year.
We could get it next year this time.
I'd be okay with that.
I'd be okay with that too. It's a more realistic timeline than, 2 years from now, we'll get another season.
No. You know what's funny? I'm more excited to see more Discovery, or not Discovery. I'm more excited for more Lower Decks than I am for any more Picard or any more Discovery. I'm going to give a willingness to watch Strange New Worlds, and Prodigy has my waifu, which is Captain Janeway. I know, find me strange and weird, but she can do anything she wants. That's okay. My captain, baby.
Even though she's supposed to be an admiral,
I don't care. I'm going up the chain. I'm going to hell for that one.
I'm more than willing to watch more Lower Decks. I'd rather watch Lower Decks again than even a single, like the entire season of Lower Decks, than a single episode of Discovery or Picard.
I'm with you there.
Like,
there's only one Discovery episode that I would probably throw in there. The is mud watching. One? Well, besides that, because he's just funny as hell. and that would be the one where you find out why, what sealed Pike's, destiny of becoming into the chair.
Yeah.
The Telos 4 episode actually is good, but that's barely a Discovery episode. That's kind of like an original series episode that's made today.
It's kind of like, fingers crossed, that's what they're going to use as the template for Strange New Worlds, sort of.
Yeah. I'm hoping they do well with that, because at least then I would have one Trek show that's live action that I would care to watch. And I'm going to watch the others just because they're a train wreck and I want to see how they go because of Star Trek. But honestly, like, I probably won't watch them a second time.
So, final question to our panel of esteemed admirals here. What do you want to see in season two of Lower Decks? For myself, I like the character developments that I'm seeing. I really want to see Tendi and Rutherford's relationship develop, because I love that scene right in the very end where they're like thinking, you don't remember who I am. He's like, no, but I don't remember what I don't remember. And she's like, that's exciting because I get to become your best friend again. That was genuinely heartfelt, and I want to see more of that.
That made me feel great, man. Oh God, she was so, because there are so many ways that you could have that be a big downer, like, oh, you don't remember this great relationship that we had, and it wasn't sexual by any means. They were just really good friends.
Oh yeah,
and then there's so many ways that could just be played for a downer, but it wasn't. It was like, man, I get to be your best friend all over again, and I'm, I raised my hand and I said yes.
That's how it should be.
Yeah, exactly. That is Star Trek. That's hope. That's positivity. Thank you.
That's Ted. What they stand for.
Thank you.
I hope in season two we finally get to see Captain Worf.
Yeah, that would be Michael cool. Dorn should do it.
That would be cool seeing him come back, because he said he'd love to come back as Worf. He just doesn't really want to put on the prosthetics and be a regular
until they give him real money. Because it's funny how that changes everything. But so as far as
Patrick Stewart level money,
like if they give me his money and then I'll show up.
If they said, hey, we're gonna do a Captain Worf, we're gonna do a couple Captain Worf TV movies, like they remember they were trying to do 10 years ago, and like if they said, hey, $20 million, he'd do it. But I could see him coming back, and they could even do, you know, have him be a recurring character that shows up now and then on there, having him, you know, have him pilot a ship so we get to see his adventures. Or even if it's like a flashback of, I don't know, Mariner served with him, maybe on his ship for a little bit.
Well, she mentioned Quark at some point, doesn't she?
Yeah, she mentions and Riker, you know, helped train her and all this. So they could do it where, like, how she met Riker is she was, just a cadet or something, and it was out with Worf. So you could do a Captain Worf episode. I don't know if I want to see Borg anymore.
No, I'm kind of over that.
Do you know what I want? I'll pitch you my season 2.
Okay.
I want USS Titan and then like 4 California classes to go through a transwarp conduit to an area in the Alpha Quadrant, but that's like 6,000, 7,000 light years from the Federation. And they get to do a season where it's old school TOS type stuff, where the Titan, where Titan is actually kind of being used as a fast responder / resupply vessel for these Californias. It's being the heavy, you know, it's acting like the backup for all these Californias to go out and actually make first contacts and explore this new quad, this new area. And you get these cool TOS style episodes where you're meeting new species because, hey, we see these characters are kind of competent, sort of, through the last episode. But let's put them in situations where now the stakes are real. Now we have people that are relying on you. And Titan can be there to pull your ass out of the fire if it gets really bad. But you need to rely on yourself.
Okay, how about this? They get sent out to that part of the Alpha Quadrant, whatever, and that's where we finally re-encounter the parasites from season 1.
Sure, why not?
That'd be pretty cool.
You can put them in there. It's like, that's like Riker goes out, they're like, why are we going out there? It's a secret mission, and you know, they still have the comedy parts and everything, and the secret mission is they finally figured out where they were transmitting that beacon to.
And that'd be a hell of a way to end a season.
And so you get out there and you can have all your jokes and make it all lighthearted. They get out there, have Boimler meeting up with everybody. Everybody's so friendly. But then like he witnesses them all eating the bugs. And he's like, that's kind of weird. But like he just doesn't get it.
You have a new character that's a Trill symbiote as well. That's all freaking completely paranoid about all of this and is really off put by the fact that these things are kind of like the Trill symbiote in this one crew member. And is disgusted by it. And there's like, I don't know. I think there could be some comedy gold out of that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Where the girl's just completely freaking out all the time. Like, oh my God, I hope you don't think that I'm like this. Well, you kind of are, but you're not a bad slug. You're a good slug.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so many things you could do. And I think I'm not as versed in TNG, like as every episode as you guys are, but is there another alien race other than the parasites that had that big of a cliffhanger that was never followed up upon?
You know who I'd love to see be more of a threat than just a one-line joke? I want the Gorn to come back. The Gorn hegemony sounds friggin' cool. And
I can tell you a lot about the Gorn because I've written for Star Trek Adventures a lot about the Gorn. But the Gorn are actually fairly close to the Federation space. Okay. So it's not like they're way far away.
Do you think that Brent Spiner would do lore again?
Again, maybe. Money, just back a truck up to his head. I was going to
say, he doesn't want to do
that. Yeah, I don't know if he would play him physically, but I know
like voice him in an episode.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he would more than be happy to come back as a voice actor. He just didn't want to put on the prosthetics anymore, which is why he's coming back as Dr. Alton Ego Soon.
The long-lost Soon's cousin, brother's former roommate.
Then again, listening to his voice recently, he sounds like he smokes 1,000 cigarettes a day. So,
maybe that's what happens when he mimics Patrick Stewart too much.
Now, I think finally is what I would like to see in season 2 is maybe more than a 10 episode order. The show can't be that expensive to produce. And if they want to get themselves up to binge-worthy status, they're going to have to start doing 20 or 30 episode seasons.
Maybe. I'd kind of be okay with that. If they gave us a true episodic that was 25 whatever episodes, like Alex just said, I'd be totally fine with that. Even if we had to wait a little bit longer, I'd be fine.
Like if we were getting batches of, let's say, 20 episode seasons nowadays, because let's be honest, they're not going to do 65 syndicated episodes anymore, but let's say they did 20 episode seasons and they just did, you know, 10 in the fall, 10 in the spring, 10 in the fall, 10 in the spring. And you would have a cycle. They need content, and like, they've got nothing else. Aren't they even canceling CBS All Access and putting it into something else?
No, you're thinking of Plus. Paramount, I think.
Paramount, they're rolling it into Paramount Plus.
Yeah, which I signed up for CBS All Access in Canada because it's like $5. But I'll be curious to see how that gets affected.
Yeah, you know what? In Canada, it doesn't have Star Trek.
Which is so strange, but we have Crave, and we also get Star Trek on Netflix. So we get Star Trek on two fronts.
Like, CBS All Access in Canada has a show called, like, it's like a police comedy, and then they have like The Good Fight or something, and that's it. There's like three shows.
Ugh.
So yeah, I think that's pretty much all I have to say on the matter. I didn't like the show when it started, liked it when it ended, and I'm optimistic for the future.
Yeah, I'm generally okay with it. I think it's by far the best Star Trek that's been on television since Enterprise. It's probably better than the J.J. Abrams movies, I would say, even though I was okay with the 2009 film, and Beyond was okay as well. This was better than those. But I still have my reservations about how it's being presented as slapsticky. You know, like, don't say this is canon. Just say it's a Star Trek show and be done with it and have fun. But don't try to, like, say, oh, no, all this is completely canon and totally in-universe when it's so tongue-in-cheek.
No. Well, the thing is if they would stop trying to shoehorn it into canon and just say, this is a separate Star Trek show, people would quit complaining about canon.
Yeah. You know, to stop saying Discovery and Picard, you know, are completely linked with the, you know, the Enterprise and before, because it isn't. But, I mean, stop it. Just go with it and stop making a big deal out of it yourselves. And people will just watch it for what it is. Shit writing still, but at least it wouldn't be arguing about canonicity. Anyway, what I'm saying is Lower Decks, it's worth watching.
Yeah, honestly, it's a really good way to spend a couple of hours. And if you binge it, I think it's a little bit better. All in agreement. It's fun.
Which, and you never would have thought we would have said about this show.
Yeah. What a turnaround, eh? And I got my Spock helmet, so I am very happy.
There was a Gorn wedding.
I love that bit. Gorn wedding! It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
But Steve, I guess you should take us back out, and I guess the next time we'll be back on this show will be in a couple weeks, and what are we going to be talking about?
Didn't we talk about how we were going to wait till Discovery
started? Yeah, that's why I said it's going to be a couple weeks till we talk.
It's going to be
that.
Yeah. I think the idea is what
three
episodes at a time, and then so the first three, then, you know, the next and so on. And when the 10th episode, which is the final for the season, airs, we'll do a recap and discussion on that, because that way we'll have hopefully a significant amount of plot and points we can talk about for each, because if it goes like last season's with us every episode being upset, I'd rather only have to do that every 3 weeks.
Yep. I have my bits of vodka ready and antidepressants. I'm ready for Discovery season 3.
What's the code word to start?
Ramen and whiskey.
You could hear something pouring in the background. It's funny. So that wraps up this episode of Future Imperfect. So how can the good people find you online?
Well, if you want to find me, my personal Twitter account is at BirdmanDodd, where I tend to reply to everybody. I talk about a lot of things, some political, some video game, some stupid crap. I try to have a little bit of fun on there, but I always interact with people. The show's Twitter account, which is run by Alex primarily, is at This Week in Geek.
I'm on Facebook as Aaron Pollier. You can find me there.
Mike basically covered me. I'm look up anything This Week in Geek and I'll be able to respond to you.
And of course, you can find me on the Twitters at SCP21 or at Altered Geek. There's a Twitter for this, I believe, as well, at Future Warped. So you can get a hold of us on all of these different methods. So until next time, live long and prosper.
Gorn Wedding!